Bhagavad Lila, 10th canto, chapter 53, Rukmini Harana Lila. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini Devi. After hearing the message from the Brahman sent by Princess Vidarbhi, Rukmini, Krishna took the Brahmana's hand and spoke to him as follows. And this chapter describes how Krishna goes to Kundina city, is worshipped by Bhishmaka, steals Rukmini when she leaves the city to worship Durga. Rukmini was disturbed internally and externally by her attachment to Sri Krishna. Krishna, however, though attached to Rukmini and very much moved internally, he did not show that, and instead he smiled and spoke to the Brahman. As Rukmini's mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. I cannot even sleep at night. I know that Rukmi, her brother, is envious and has forbidden our marriage. He's prevented his sister's marriage to me. Rukmini has dedicated herself exclusive to me, my dear Brahman, and her beauty is faultless. I will bring her here after thrashing those worthless kings in battle, as one brings a blazing flame out of firewood. By this Krishna is implying Rukmini, who is enveloped by wicked members of the royal order like Rukmi, she herself will cause them all to become burned up. I, on the other hand, will only be the stimulus for that. Krishna ordered Daruka to ready his chariot. Krishna's chariot had four beautiful horses named Shaibya, Sugriv, Megapushpa, and Balahaka. Shaibya, the horse named Shaibya, was green in color like a parrot's wing. The horse named Sugriva was yellow gold. And Megapushpa, that horse was the color of a cloud, dark blue rain cloud. And Balahaka, that horse is whitish. So Krishna's four horses yoking his chariot were brilliant green, golden yellow, dark blue and whitish. Then Krishna and the Brahman mounted the chariot, and they arrived in Vidarbha in a single night. Krishna heard the message of Rukmini from the Brahmana in the evening in Dwarka, and he immediately left on his chariot and arrived in Kundina early the next morning. Due to attachment to his son Rukmi, King Bhishmaka consented to marry his daughter Rukmini to Shishupal, and he had decorated the city accordingly for the marriage. The men and women of Kundina city were wearing spotless clothing, brilliant, valuable necklaces, fragrant scents and flower garlands, and their bodies were covered with sandalwood paste. The main roads were cleansed and sprinkled with water and decorated with various kinds of banners on flagpoles. Rukmini wore two pieces of new cloth fresh from the loom, because only spotless clothing fresh off the loom should be worn during auspicious ceremonies. And she was adorned with excellent ornaments. The best of brahmanas chanted mantras to create auspicity for the protection of the bride from Rigsama and Yajurveda. Damagosh, the lord of Chedi, had also engaged brahmanas to chant mantras for the ceremony of his son Shishupal's marriage. The father of Shishupal, King Damogosh, traveled to Kundina city with his armies of elephants, dripping mada, which is a liquid which is dripping from the foreheads of elephants while they're in procession due to the passion of their hearts. There are so many friends of Shishupal there, like Shalva, Jarasan, Dantavakra, and Vidarat, and Pondraka, and all kinds of other kings. And these kings were, of course, all envious of Krishna, and they thought, if Krishna comes here with Balaram to steal Rukmini, we will join together and fight him. All these kings came to the wedding to make sure the Rukmini was given to Shishupal. Hearing from various persons, Balaram went to Kundina with a huge contingent of troops. Due to his strong affection for his brother, he was worried about his brother. The lovely Rukmini was anxiously awaiting Krishna's arrival, and she was wondering, "Oh, I do not see the Brahmin returning with any news. Alas, my wedding will take place when this night ends. Oh, how unlucky I am. Lotus-eyed Krishna does not come. I don't know why. And even the Brahmin messenger has not returned with any news." Even before sunrise, Rukmini felt anxious of fear and eagerness. "This night of 9 hours has finished. Tomorrow night is the time fixed for my wedding of this most unfortunate woman." Rukmini was thinking, at first, Krishna was ready to come. And because the Brahmana would accompany him, he did not send the Brahmana. However, at the time of leaving, Krishna considered some fault in my body or character, so he gave up his plan to come here. It would be improper for Krishna, who is faultless in body and mind, to marry me, who am full of faults. Being unsuccessful, the Brahmana has not come to see me out of fear that I would give up my body upon hearing this bad news. I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed toward me, nor is Lord Shiva or his wife, Gauri. They have turned against me. Rukmini is in tense anxiety. She's thinking, maybe Krishna did not want to come, but he was stopped on the path by the Creator, Brahma, who is not favorably inclined toward me. But why should Brahma be unfavorable? Perhaps the cause is Lord Shiva, who has become angry because of my failure to properly worship him on some occasion. But he, Lord Shiva, is Maheshwara, the great controller. So why should he be angry with such an insignificant and foolish girl as me? Perhaps the fault is Shiva's wife, Gauri Devi, who is somehow displeased with me, even though I worship her every day. Alas, alas, how have I offended Gauri Durga? So much that she has turned against me. But after all, Durga is also called Rudrani because she is a wife of Rudra, and her very name Rudrani means one who makes everyone cry. So perhaps Rudrani, Gauri Durga, and Shiva want to make me cry. But seeing that I am so miserable, that I am about to give up my life, why don't they soften their hearts? There must be some fault in Gauri's heritage. The reason must be that Durga Devi is also called Girija. She was Girija. She was born from the Himalayas, Himavati, Parvati. She's the adopted daughter of a mountain, Girija. So how could her heart melt? Because her heart is like stone. In her incarnation as Sati, she gave up her body. So perhaps she now wants me to give up my body too. Thinking like this, that young maiden whose mind had been stolen by Krishna closed her tear-filled eyes, remembering that there was still time. Rukmini thought, "Oh, fickle mind, do not prepare to give up this body now, because the time of Krishna's coming has not yet passed. Therefore, before giving up this body, let me see Krishna's face in meditation. please do not prevent this, dear mind. Then Rukmini closed her eyes. While waiting for the arrival of Govinda, Rukmini's left thigh, arm and eye, and other bodily limbs trembled, which are signs of auspiciousness, Priya Bhashina. Just then, the purest of learned Brahmins, carrying Krishna's order, entered the inner chambers of Rukmini's palace. He was especially ordered by Krishna. Panditji, go quickly and tell Rukmini that I have reached the city gardens on the outskirts of the city. In the rapture of seeing Krishna and her meditation, Rukmini was glowing. Due to her extreme absorption and meditation on Krishna, Rukmini was walking inside her chambers with the purpose of going to Krishna. Seeing the Brahmana's joyful face and serene movements, saintly Rukmini inquired from him with a pure smile. The Brahmin said, I, Sunanda Brahmin, have come now from the side of your beloved. Please cast your glance upon me. Thus roused from her rapture of meditation, Rukmini looked at the Brahmana. Noticing his serenity and the joy in the Brahmin's face, Rukmini's anxiety disappeared. Rukmini was expert in reading omens, so she understood from the face of the Brahmana that his mission was successful. She smiled slightly, Shuchi Smita, indicating her genuine joy. Previously, she had been falsely smiling to hide her inner suffering. The Brahmin announced to Rukmini that Yadunandan had arrived. He described how Krishna had promised to marry her, relating his words such as Tam Anayishya. Tell Rukmini I will bring Rukmini to Dwarka. Princess Vaidarbhi Rukmini was overjoyed to learn of Krishna's arrival. Not finding anything within reach to offer to the Brahmin, she simply bowed down to him. She was thinking, what can I give to this Brahmin to satisfy him as a remuneration? Thinking like this, Rukmini simply bowed down, since she did not see any dear thing to express her indebtedness, even the offering of her own self. But at that very moment, the house of the Brahmana, which is some distance away from Rukmini's palace, became filled with all sorts of treasures. This was the response of Mahalakshmi to show her gratitude to the Brahmin. Hearing that Krishna and Balaram had arrived in his city of Kundina, King Bhishmaka went out to greet them and presented them Madhuparka, new clothing, etc., and worshipped them according to standard rituals, and arranged opulent accommodations for the two lords and their army and entourage, and he showed them proper hospitality. Bhishmaka is described as Mahamati, generous, because he was contented in his heart, knowing that Krishna had come to marry his qualified daughter. Therefore, he elaborately worshipped Krishna. When the residents of Vaidarbhapura, Kundina, heard that Sri Krishna had come, they all drank the honey of his beautiful lotus face with the cupped palms of their eyes. The people drank the incomparable sweetness of Krishna's lotus face, Papustan Mukha Pankajam. There's unlimited honey contained in this lotus of Krishna's face. How wonderful it is that many parties could drink from just one lotus at the same time. The people were saying, the citizens of the city, Rukmini and no one else deserves to become Krishna's wife. And Krishna, possessing such flawless beauty, is the only suitable husband for our princess, Rukmini. Vishnav. This verse combines statements made by different citizens of Vaidarbha kingdom. Seven statements have combined into one. So seven statements means that seven different people were stating different things. One person said, for Krishna alone and no one other. Two, he should accept Rukmini as his wife, not as an enjoyable object. It should be Rukmini alone and no one else. Four, this certainly must be and should not be avoided. Five, Krishna alone and no one else should be her husband. Six, for Rukmini and no one else is qualified to marry Krishna. Seven, Krishna is perfectly suited, not at all unsuitable. In this way, also four other statements could be made. Rukmini should certainly be Krishna's wife. There's no question about it. Krishna, and only Krishna, should be Rukmini's husband. Krishna should be the husband of Rukmini only. Krishna must be the husband of Rukmini. And they went on, next verse. May Achyuta, the creator of the three worlds, be satisfied with whatever sukriti we have done and show mercy by taking the hand of Rukmini. The citizen said, let Krishna be satisfied with whatever pious acts we have done. We offer all our pious credits to Rukmini so she can marry Krishna. The citizens spoke like this out of their deep love for Rukmini. Rukmini was carried in a palanquin from the city palace to the temple complex of Durga, which is outside the city. And then Rukmini walked the 15-foot distance into the temple while surrounded by guards. Mridangas and conches resounded auspiciously. Rukmini performed achman and entered the inner sanctum of the temple. The Brahmanis, the elder wives of the Brahmanas, they led Rukmini in offering respects to Bhavani and her consort, Lord Bhava, means Shiva and Durga. They were expert in shastras, and they knew of Rukmini's desire to marry Krishna. They had her worship Durga along with Shiva. They prompted Rukmini to pray thus. Rukmini should pray like this. O Durga, just as you, the wife of Shiva, are always united with Shiva, please make me Krishna's wife and keep me always united with him. Having seen Krishna, the elderly Brahmanis prayed in the same way as the citizens did previously. They all together said, may the results of our pious acts be given to Rukmini. The elderly wives of the Brahmanas led Rukmini in chanting the mantra, may Ganesh remove all the obstacles now facing me. May you consent that Krishna will become my husband. Then Durga answered, so be it. May Krishna be your husband. Rukmini worshipped Bhavani with water, scents, incense, clothing, necklaces, jewelry, and all the right offerings, and so many ghee lamps. And the Brahmin ladies gave the prasadi, Bhavani prasadi ornaments to Rukmini. Then Rukmini offered respects to Ambika and took her remnants as prasad. Rukmini gave up her munibrat, her vow of silence, and left the Ambika temple, holding on to a maidservant with her hand, which was adorned with a jeweled ring. Now, in several verses, it describes the beauty of Rukmini as she came out of the palace, and all the assembled kings were there, sitting on their horses, and what they saw. They saw her beautiful virgin beauty, shapely waist, lovely face with earrings, beautiful raised hips, surrounded with a jewel-studded belt and budding breasts, and shy, hesitant eyes, surrounded by curly locks of hair. She smiled sweetly, and her jasmine bud teeth reflected the glow of her red lips. She walked like a royal swan, and her tinkling ankle bells beautified her feet. All the heroes were totally bewildered, afflicted with lust. Seeing her broad smile and shy glances, they dropped their weapons and fell unconscious to the ground. They fell off their elephants, chariots, and horses. On the pretext of the procession, Rukmini displayed her beauty for Krishna alone. With the fingernails of her left hand, she pushed some strands of hair away from her face and shyly looked from the corners of her eyes. Then she saw Krishna. Then, while the enemies looked on, Krishna seized the princess, who was eager to mount his chariot. Vishnu says, the demons who were inimical to Krishna saw Rukmini, who is Krishna's Chidananda Maya, internal potency, as Maya. Seeing Rukmini as Krishna's Maya potencies, the heroes became bewildered. This is the same thing that happened to the wrestlers in Mathura, who saw Krishna as a thunderbolt rather than a tender young boy. They could not perceive Krishna's true identity. Similarly, the heroes present in Kundina were thinking that this beautiful girl Rukmini was no mortal, but rather the supreme Maya potency, who bewilders even the demigods. Rukmini is described as a Shama woman, and a Shama woman is described as her breasts are very firm, and when someone in her presence feels, and when someone is in her presence, he will feel warm in the winter and cool in the summer. The warriors became overcome with lust on seeing Rukmini's prominent breasts and her unsteady eyes moving about as if afraid of her locks of hair. Rukmini's teeth were finely shaped like jasmine buds and tinted red from the reflection of her bimba fruit red lips. Rukmini's moving feet were beautified by the glow of her skillfully crafted tinkling ankle bells. The warriors were tormented by the lust generated by seeing Rukmini as Maya. This resembles Pururava, who became afflicted by lust when he saw Urvasi in the fiery image produced by the Gandharvas. Pururava became lusty, not by the fiery image, but by the thought that it was Urvasi. Similarly, the hero's lusty agitation was due to their perception of Maya, and not due to perceiving Rukmini. Non-devotees can never perceive the beautiful form of Rukmini, because she is a manifestation of Krishna's internal energy, Surup Shakti. Thus, the heroic kings assembled in Vidarbha became agitated with lust upon seeing the Lord's illusory potency, an expansion of Rukmini. The warriors became so bewildered that they fainted on seeing Rukmini, who had offered her beauty to Krishna and no one else. Rukmini was walking very slowly as she came out of the temple of Bhavani, Durga, because she was searching for Krishna. However, upon seeing the other kings present, she felt shy. But she would not show such bashfulness on seeing Krishna. Then Rukmini saw Achyuta. And the word Achyuta is used because Krishna never left her heart. Krishna lifted Rukmini onto his chariot. With Balaram in the lead, he slowly exited, like a lion removing his prey from the midst of jackals. The inimical kings headed by Jarasandha could not tolerate this humiliating defeat. They explained, "Oh, damn us! Though we are mighty archers, a mere coward has stolen our honor, just as puny animals might steal the honor of lions. Finding their defeat intolerable, the angry, envious kings abuse the Yadavas. "We are unfortunate because our fame has been stolen by coward men."